our TSN Hockey Insider. A presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Dave Boulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well. A cold, rainy morning here, but a lot of weekend hockey. And you watch what's happening around the league, and it's both surprising and interesting and all of the above.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with Ottawa's game against the Rangers. And, man, they were in control of pretty much that entire game, and then it all went askew. The coach talked about Nick Paul's fight against Sammy Blais and that jumbling up the lines, and then we had a Parker Kelly penalty when they were still up 2-0, and then the embellishment call, which took away a power play when they were still up 2-1. If Dave Poulin was asked to pinpoint the one moment that you think decided that game, what would you choose?
It might have been an early third period save on Josh Norris by Georgiev, and you're up 2-0 at the time. And I always look at timely saves for goaltenders, and I think they get lost in the equation sometimes. And, you know, all the above points that DJ mentioned, and particularly with how thin you are at center right now, and Nick Paul, you know, gets involved at that point, and he's doing what he feels is the right thing to do. And you know, and then your lines are messed up. But you look at the two goals, the second goal and the third goal, the second goal, 4-on-4 situation, and that's a defenseman passing to a defenseman right along the goal line. And, you know, arguably your best defensive forward is Connor Brown, and he gets beaten to the front of the net. But those two defensemen have played together since their national team days. And so, you know, they know each other well, and it's just, I guess, an unusual play to see a goal line pass to from defenseman to defenseman. And then, you know, Brady Tkachuk has got to get that puck out on that third goal. And it's a tough assignment. He gets pinched down on by Trouba, and, you know, and they make a good play, and yes, they get a bounce. But I'll guarantee you, if you talk to Brady Tkachuk, he just looks at you and says, I got to get that puck out. And it's a really, it's a skill that develops in the NHL, and guys work on it and work on it and work on it. And, you know, and anything that comes around the boards on their side, they want to own. It doesn't matter that Trouba's crashing down on him. It doesn't matter. He either eats it in his feet, or he gets it out, or, you know, he makes some sort of play there. And that's something that you know, as he gets more and more experience in the National Hockey League, he's going to make that play. And so there's two of your top forwards involved in those goals. And obviously the injury to Matt Murray is really unfortunate. And I don't think, you know, there's any intent by Kreider going through there. I didn't at all like the late hit by Kreider on Norris. And now that anybody else, but I don't think there's any intent on Kreider when he's going through that crease and gets that first goal. And it's just, you know, you don't want to see your number one goalie, who's played so well this year, you know, have any sort of a ding at this point.
Pooley, thoughts on Stützle, the embellishment call, the overall calls, and Mark Mathot in the telecast and on Twitter mentioned, hey, felt like that was a bit of a reputation call.
Yeah, it is, and that's unfortunate that a guy has that early, but I don't like that call at all, you know, especially at that point in the game. You know, he's going full flight there, and that stick is right in there, tucked in there. So you don't want your name to be associated in any manner with, you know, looking for an embellishment. I mean, you just flat out don't. And I don't know if that's, you know, if this early that referees are deciding that with Timmy Stützle. I understand that you might think that, but boy, oh boy, I just think that's a tough call, especially at that point in the game.
Do you think, and he was asked after the game, you know, were you warned by the officials because there was an earlier incident? Were you warned? Because I guess typically that is what happened. Hey, kid, come on, don't stop doing that. And then he did it. He said he wasn't warned. Should that have made any difference?
Yeah, I prefer a conversation there. And I think the best referees are really good at communicating. And, you know, granted, we worked in one referee system, and you knew everybody, and, you know, and they would grab, or they might grab me, you know, as captain or an assistant captain and say, hey, talk to your young guy there and have a word with them and just make sure that's cleaned up right away. Cause they don't want to have that in their mind at any point. And, you know, there's so many new guys and so many young guys, and the best referees though, communicate. I mean, there's a reason everybody loves Wes McCauley as a referee, because he talks to guys. He simply, you know, he's willing to have that conversation. And sometimes it's a tough conversation. The player doesn't want to hear it by any means. But the willingness to communicate, it's funny now when I run into referees, you know, at various events, we always talk about that and the fact that, you know, first of all, referees had names on their jersey and they were people and there were less of them and you knew them all. And, you know, if you played in the league a long time, you knew guys, you knew linesmen, you knew officials, you knew guys, and you knew what you could or couldn't say at a given point. And they knew you. And I just think that's a tough thing for a young guy to think, you know, already at this stage in his career, that he's even thinking about stuff like that.
Thoughts on the Sens overall, Pooley? I thought a lot of structure there, but as far as the lines, D pairings, and Matt Murray's play?
Yeah, I think that Matt Murray was really solid, but, you know, I think it's coming, Simmer. I really do. And the defense is still a work in progress. And I think we know that. And, you know, you've got to shuffle the lines when you lose a couple of guys, not only White, but now Pinto. And, yes, Pinto's a young player, but he was in a valuable spot there. The pickup of Dylan Gambrell is interesting. I know him more from his college days at Denver. He was really highly regarded coming out of Denver. He was one of their top scorers each year that he was there, and they won a national championship. And he was there with some really good players, too. That Borgstrom kid was there. Troy Terry was there. Danton Heinen was there. Trevor Moore. And they had a pretty loaded-up college team playing for Jimmy Montgomery. And he was really well thought of. And I know San Jose was really high on him. He's been a point-a-game player in the American League. So I think, you know, I mentioned on Friday that it was going to be hard to make a move. I think that's a pretty under-the-radar move. And you're going probably back to your amateur scouts on that one and saying, is there anybody who's come into the league and might be, you know, might have got bumped out of a spot early this year? And, you know, probably the play actually of Jasper Weatherby in San Jose probably knocked him out of a spot. And, you know, but he's, I think it's a pretty low risk move and you've created some depth now and that will help as well. But from a structure standpoint, everything, the Rangers are a pretty good team. And, you know, and they're getting good goaltending from both guys. And so overall, I think it's, you know, you're not extremely down on the team. And let's face it, with 5.5 minutes to go, you were up 3-0 in that hockey, or 2-0 in that hockey game.
Yeah, and part of what led to that comeback was a penalty from Parker Kelly. That's what led to the first New York Ranger goal. He ends up getting sent down to Belleville yesterday. The coach is really high on him. Do you think, that he is sent there in part because that was a big, big mistake? And if that's the case, what sort of messaging do you send him down to the minors, you know, with that?
I don't think that is the case. I think that's more situational, you know, from a lineup standpoint. I know they're high on his energy and they're high on the way he plays. And if he's not a fit up here in that role right now, then you do send him down to Belleville. And I think that's something that they've stressed. And they want their guys to develop in the role that they're best going to play in the National Hockey League, not just to be in the National Hockey League and play, you know, 4 minutes a night or whatever. But if they, wherever they picture him eventually, they want him to be able to play that role effectively in the American League. So I don't think that there's a correlation. You probably have that conversation, JR, and you probably have that note and say, hey, you know, we're sending you down, and we're not sending you down because of the penalty. But by the way, you can't take that penalty at that point in the game. You've got to be aware of the situation, and you've got to know, you know, exactly where we are in the game, because we want to be able to play you in that position. We want to be able to play you at that point. And, you know, I mean, who knows what they're going to call it. I mean, I couldn't play the game today if they call that hooking. I simply couldn't. Because my stick had a motor on it, and it was going all the time. And we were taught to attack the hands. I mean, that's just what we were taught, right? And but I think it is a learning experience, but I don't think he's sent down because of it.
I thought Pooley actually had a series of bad penalties. Do you also just feel in trying to adapt on the minutes that he's getting here or not getting that he's been chasing the play most of the time, maybe trying to force things a little bit?
Pretty common amongst the young guy, I think, Simmer. I really do. You know, when you're known as an energy guy, you are trying to create every time you're out there because you don't know how many minutes you're going to play. You know, are you in the 8 to 12 minute range? And if I'm going to be out there that much, I'm going to be so effective when I'm out there. So I think the energy role naturally creates that, you know, that readiness, and you're up on your toes and you're being aggressive because that's what you're there to do.
What are the Ottawa Senators getting in the Washington Capitals, who are visiting tonight?
Wow, pretty good hockey club. They're led by a guy you may have heard of, Alexander Ovechkin, you know. And I got asked early last year about his chase of Gretzky, and I was like, yeah. You know, I just know, you know, I played till I was in my 37th year, and I know how hard it was as I got older. And you watched, you know, you watch players and you watch when they fell off. I believe Gretz got 9 goals in his final year and still, you know, looked like he could play. He got 9 goals. And so I didn't think that was attainable. And I could be flat out wrong, guys. I mean, the way he's going, the way he sets up, the players he's playing with, he doesn't even have his main go-to guy at Backstrom right now. But, you know, Kuznetsov's been good. You still get the power play with Carlson at the top of it, so he's still going to get his shots. But it's a sneaky good team. And you know what's – you talk about the twists and turns, guys. Vanecek was taken in the expansion draft by Seattle. And then they found out that Grubauer was interested in going there. And, you know, a week later they signed Grubauer, and they trade Vanecek back to Washington for a second-round pick. So Vanecek was a guy that Washington lost and now is starring for them early in the year. So, and you could say, wow, that's really smart of Washington to get him back, but was it really smart of them to let him go in the first place? You know? And so a nice fortuitous bounce for them, and that Grubauer goes to Seattle and delivers their goaltending tandem back. But this is a pretty good hockey team, and they're in that group of teams. And I put St. Louis there, who's roared out to their start. You know, who won a cup in the last couple of years and in, you know, in the very short span, and can they come back and do it again with that same group of players? And the GM and Brian McClellan feels that they deserve a chance to, because they've done it for him. And Doug Armstrong feels the same way in St. Louis. And arguably to a lesser extent, that's been part of Stan Bowman's problems, you know, trying to reconstruct around Kane and Taves. And Boston's probably been the longest standing. They've been trying to rebuild around a group that won in 2011. But when a team wins and their key players, you know, do so much for a GM, he wants to give them that chance again. And I feel this is, you know, you could say this is the last stab with Washington because they are an older team, but it probably is. I mean, you're getting into that. But in terms of the longevity of their main guy in Alexander Ovechkin, boy, oh boy, he just looks like the ever-ready bunny to me. He just keeps going.
Caps don't have a lot of depth. They need secondary scoring. Gave up a first and second round pick for Mantha. What is his deal, Pooley? Certainly we see the talent. Is it inconsistency at 27 years old?
You know, it's a rap he's always had, Simmer. We interviewed him in the 2014 draft, and that was our concern. And, I mean, he went back and had the monster year after he was drafted, but that was our concern. You saw the talent. You saw the size. You saw everything about it, but you would sort of thought, you know, we traded at 26. You would have sort of thought he could still be a part of it in Detroit, but they didn't think so. And so it is that consistency to do it, you know, because when you get teased like he can tease, you want that all the time. I mean, that's human nature. Is if I see him do it that well, the speed, the combination of skill, the power, why aren't you giving that to me more often? And the best players do, and he hasn't quite gotten to that level yet.
You're sitting in Toronto.
Tight right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, give us a little sense on the pulse of the city right now. A 7-1 loss in Pittsburgh, a 5-3 loss to San Jose the night before at home. The Leafs have won 2 of their first 6 games. If you're Kyle Dubas right now, how worried are you about your team?
Oh, I think there's concern there. I think, you know, when you go into Pittsburgh, you know, not only were they without Malkin and Crosby, but, you know, Jeff Carter had been playing really well, had the COVID protocol. Brian Rust was out, who's a really good player for them. Chris Letang was out. And I think it was the people that did it to them that really caused them concern. Evan Rodriguez had been here in Toronto and basically released to go sign with Pittsburgh. He was in their number one center slot on Saturday night. And I think that's a really well-coached group. I think Mike Sullivan's one of the best coaches in the NHL. And, you know, and they're getting the goaltending. I mean, Tristan Jarry, a lot like the Matt Murray conversation, was, you know, he had success early and young in his career. Could he get back to the level? He's been solid for them. but it's the way that Toronto lost, and their bigs simply haven't done it. And then you're looking at, you know, people that have left the organization simply because of cap reasons for free that weren't traded. And Freddie Anderson's off to a great start in Carolina, and Zach Hyman, I believe, would have more goals than the total combination of Tavares, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews right now. And was such a heart and soul player for them. You know, I actually wrote a column last year, and I called him a Wednesday player. And it was just something I was thinking about, because Wednesday connects your days of the week. You know, you got your Monday and Tuesday, and then you got your Thursday and Friday, but the Wednesday guys come to play, and they keep everybody connected and everybody joined, and they're there and they work every single day, because it's probably the most disregarded day of the week. And that's the kind of player Zach Hyman is for them. So they're watching, you know, those two guys in particular have success elsewhere, and that's causing consternation. And, you know, it was one thing last week to have to put a college goalie in as a backup who had, you know, signed an amateur tryout offer for one day, a kid named Bishop of the University of Toronto. But, you know, to come back and play Michael Hutchinson on Friday night, Michael Hutchinson has really struggled here, guys, but he's struggled for 4 years. And, you know, he's had moments, but you can't have moments when you're relied on as a depth goalie in the organization. But he fits their organizational needs because he fits their cap, and he's a really good guy, and they can send him down on waivers. But when he comes up to the NHL, you got to be able to win a game. And he, you know, he wasn't able to do that Friday night in the front end of a doubleheader. So I think there's lots of concern.
If Hyman's a Wednesday player, what day does Richie play?
Wow.
No, I'm being honest. No, there's been a long, yeah. And again, you gave him 2.5. He was going to hop in. Now, I'll put fault on Marner and Matthews, but is this not a major miss on a player that this is exactly his problem when he was in Anaheim and Boston, that he didn't bring her every night, and he certainly didn't use that size, and six games in, he's got nothing.
Yes, that is the case. I mean, he was 10th overall in the draft, and we took a lot of heat that year. That was my final year. We took a lot of heat for taking Nylander at 8, as did Winnipeg, for taking Ehlers at 9. And if you remember, it was Don Cherry, who, because Nick Ritchie was the 10th pick overall, who said, you know, these guys totally missed on this guy. He got a big, tough guy, and he's this and he's that. Well, he didn't do it in Anaheim, and he didn't do it in Boston. He had a chance to play with good players there. You know, they were trying to get him for the second line for Krejci. That didn't work out. And then he was one of two guys they brought in here, in Michael Bunting, who had played 26 games in the National Hockey League as a 26-year-old, and then Nick Ritchie. And so you thought, okay, you're going to plug Ritchie in with one of those two top lines. He's going to be able to do it. But it's not as easy to play with two great players like that because of the way they think the game, guys. I mean, they, you know, Marner and Matthews think the game on a different level. And yes, you can say, well, you're a big, strong guy, just go to the front of the net with your stick on the ice, but you've got to do that at the right time. And the other thing you have to do with those two guys is you have to be the first guy in on the forecheck. And he hasn't been able to do it. And, you know, they've gotten quite a bit out of Michael Bunting with Tavares and Marner. And arguably, he's been one of their best forwards on a night-to-night basis. But to expect to bring two players in as NHL free agents in the mid-tier, or in Bunting's case, even the lower tier, and plug them into your first two lines on an NHL contending team, that's asking a lot, guys. That's asking a real lot. And, you know, to be able to have a perfect storm and have those two players come in and just, you know, be top six players. And so far, Richie has not worked out. And the line of questioning went that way on Friday night. And Sheldon Keefe slammed it shut. He really slammed it shut. He actually called the question, I believe he called it unfair.
Inappropriate,
yeah, which I didn't think the question was inappropriate at all. He had benched a player. And, you know, he had benched the player through a good portion of the game. So I'm not sure how that was an inappropriate question. It was a question about an action the coach had performed during the game. So he had not been happy with the player's play. And then he actually made the comment that, you know, you should be asking as many questions about his line mates, Matthews and Marner, as you are about him. So he was trying to deflect away from the player, and then he put the player back into the same role the next night. But that game in Pittsburgh was really painful to watch for Leaf fans, because from top to bottom, it simply wasn't a good effort.
Last one for you. Lucas Raymond had a hat trick yesterday for Detroit. He's got 7 points in his first six games, including 4 goals. He, of course, was the fourth choice right after Timmy Stützle went to Ottawa in the 2020 draft. What are your early thoughts on what you've seen from this player in his first year coming over from Sweden?
Well, I had the opportunity, JR, to watch him in the U18s and the U-juniors, and he played with a Holtz kid that was drafted by Jersey. And they were dynamite. And they played, I mean, he played, I think, as a 15-year-old maybe, or maybe a 16-year-old for Frölunda in the Swedish league. And then he played a couple of full years. So at 19, he's played a couple of years of pro. He's a really smart player. And he and Alexander Holtz were the two that just lit it up together. And, you know, were projected top 10. They went, what, fourth and ninth. But Stevie Eiserman may have got another one in this guy.
Detroit never seems to swing and miss on their Swedes, do they?
No, they had a pretty good reputation, although they never took them this high.
That's true. That's a good point. All right, Dave, appreciate the time. As always, look forward to chatting with you again on Wednesday.
Okay, guys, have a great day. Thanks.